The Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome to this deep dive. Today we are taking on a concept that feels, well, it feels both ancient and incredibly current, martyrdom.
Yeah, it's a word we hear a lot. We think we know what it means, someone dying heroically for a cause, right?
Exactly. But Julian Mitchell's work, which we're exploring today, shows us that definition isn't so simple. It's actually more like a prize, a really powerful one.
A prize fought over in political and ideological battles? That's the heart of it. Our mission today is really to unpack Mitchell's analysis of how martyrdom is, well, made. How it's constructed, how it's argued over, and how it changes across time and, crucially, through different media.
Mm-hmm. And if you, listening, want to understand why a single death can suddenly ignite incredible devotion or justify terrible violence or even become the bedrock of a group's entire identity,
then Mitchell's framework is, honestly, essential. He gives us the tools to look critically at these powerful narratives.
Right. We're moving beyond just the historical fact someone died, and we're really digging into the mechanics, the storytelling, the persuasion behind it all.
So let's talk about the guide for this exploration, Julian Mitchell. He's got quite a unique background for tackling this.
He really does. He's a professor at the University of Edinburgh, working across theology, arts, religion.
But, and this is the key part, I think, he's also got serious media jobs. He's produced and directed documentaries for the BBC.
Yeah, and that combination is just so valuable here. He's not just looking at ancient texts or philosophical debates. He gets how these deeply sacred, often ancient ideas are packaged and, well, sold to us today.
Right. He connects the dots between, say, an ancient sermon and a modern social media campaign. It's that whole communication pipeline he understands.
And that understanding leads directly to his main point. Martyrdom isn't some fixed thing you just find. It has to be built. Constructed.
It's actively constructed by a community. That's the core argument.
Okay, so let's really get into that. We generally assume, you know, someone dies for a belief, martyr, simple. But Mitchell says, hold on, the death itself, not enough.
Not nearly enough. A death only becomes a martyrdom when a community, an audience, decides to interpret it that way. They frame it as a purposeful, a voluntary act of witness.
That interpretation part is key, isn't it? It's not automatic.
It's everything. The label martyr is like the ultimate stamp of approval, the highest moral credential a group can give. Mm-hmm. And controlling who gets that label, well, that's a major power struggle.
So understanding how that label gets applied, how the story is built, that gives us the critical tools. We don't have to just accept the claim.
Exactly. You can start to analyze it, to see the machinery behind it.
Okay, let's rewind a bit. Where did this idea even start? The word itself, martyrs in Greek.
Right, martyrs. It just meant witness. Someone who testifies to something they've seen or believe. Not necessarily anything about dying.
So just testimony. How did it get narrowed down then to involve suffering, pain, and ultimately death?
Well, that shift happened pretty early, especially within Christianity. You get figures like Polycarp of Smyrna, you know, these iconic early figures. Their stories, their refusal to renounce their faith even when facing death, kind of set the template. That act transformed mere testimony into the ultimate sacrifice.
So that's where the dying for your faith part really solidifies.
Yes. But even then, Mitchell argues, the core idea remained communication. It wasn't just the act, it was the message the act sent, and crucially, how the community received and amplified that message.
It needs an audience. It needs social validation.
Precisely. The title martyr is something bestowed by the community. It reinforces their beliefs, their identity, often positioning them as morally superior to whoever caused the death.
That distinction feels huge. The story, the interpretation, is actually more powerful than the physical event itself.
Mm-hmm. And Mitchell takes this further, describing the event and its retelling as a kind of performance. He calls it sacred theater.
Sacred theater. Okay, tell me more about that.
Well, think about it. The individual often seems to follow a kind of cultural script, right? The defiant last words, the calm acceptance of pain, the final prayer. It's all very dramatic, very performative.
Like they know their role in a story that's bigger than them.
Exactly. But the performance doesn't actually end with the death. Mitchell argues it continues, sometimes for centuries, in the way the story is told and retold.
So the aftermath is part of the theater too.
Absolutely. The community keeps the performance alive, collecting relics, writing these often highly embellished biographies, hagiographies, building shrines.
Right, making the person almost superhuman.
Yes. And all of that reinforces the group's identity. usually against some perceived enemy or oppressor.
But surely the authorities, whether it's the Roman Empire back then or a modern state, they don't just sit back and let this happen, right? They don't want heroes being made out of people they just executed.
Oh, absolutely not. They fight back immediately with counter-narratives. If one side is building a martyr, the other side is busy trying to discredit them.
How do they do that? What do those counter-narratives look like? Do they just deny the facts?
Usually not the death itself, no. They attack the meaning. They work hard to relabel the person. Instead of martyr, they push labels like traitor, criminal, heretic, or, you know, the modern equivalent, terrorist.
Ah, okay. So it's a battle over the label itself.
It's a battle for moral legitimacy, pure and simple. Is this person a saint or a threat? Controlling that definition is crucial for any power structure. It's the tactic as old as time.
What's really striking here is how Mitchell connects this whole process, the theater, the narrative, the counter-narrative, to the evolution of media.
Yeah, that's a fascinating thread in the book. He argues the history of martyrdom is basically inseparable from the history of communication technology.
How so?
Well, think about it. Before mass media, martyr stories spread mostly by word of mouth, maybe some handwritten accounts. They were powerful locally, sure, but they couldn't easily unify, say, a whole nation.
Okay, limited reach.
Right, but then comes the printing press. Mitchell points to things like John Fox's Book of Martyrs in 16th century England. Mm. This wasn't just collecting stories, it was like revolutionary propaganda tech.
How did it work as propaganda?
It created this standardized, widely accessible national narrative of Protestant suffering under Catholic rule. Yeah. It powerfully defined us, English Protestants, against them, the Catholic threat. It shaped national identity through shared stories of sacrifice.
Wow, so the medium literally helped forge the identity.
Totally. Then jump forward. Think about the 20th century, photography and film. Suddenly, you don't just hear stories, you see images.
Right, images of civil rights activists being attacked or revolutionary figures.
Exactly. Those images created instant global icons. They crossed language barriers. Suffering became immediate, visible, visceral, potentially to the whole world at once.
And now, the digital age.
Oh, the speed and the polish are just something else. Mitchell discusses how groups like ISIS, for example, used incredibly sophisticated production. HD video, slick editing, graphics, turning acts of extreme violence into viral recruitment tools almost instantly.
So the media isn't just reporting on martyrdom anymore.
No, it's actively participating in creating it, shaping it, amplifying it, disseminating it globally at lightning speed. The medium is absolutely part of the message construction.
That speed and reach also seem linked to how the concept itself has broadened out, hasn't it? Beyond just religion.
Definitely. Mitchell spends quite a bit of time on what you could call secular martyrs.
We see this constantly, right? People who die for political or social causes. Figures like Martin Luther King Jr., maybe, or Che Guevara, or Mohamed Bouazizi in Tunisia, whose death sparked the Arab Spring.
Precisely those kinds of figures. Their deaths are often framed using the exact same narrative templates perfected by religious traditions. The ultimate sacrifice for justice, for the people, for the nation.
It's the same powerful storytelling structure.
Yeah. Yes. And Mitchell doesn't shy away from the really tough cases either. He applies this analytical lens to things like suicidal martyrdom, suicide bombing.
That's incredibly controversial territory.
It is. And he's very careful. He's not condoning the violence at all. His goal is to help us understand the often quite sophisticated theological arguments and the deliberate media strategies these groups use. How do they justify overriding traditional religious rules against suicide? How do they build a culture where this becomes seen as the ultimate act of devotion? He dissects the logic, however abhorrent we find it.
It's about understanding the mechanics, not endorsing the outcome.
Exactly. He also touches on gender, which is fascinating, how martyrdom stories are often very gendered.
How so?
Well, you look at some early Christian martyrs, women like Perpetua. Their stories often show them radically subverting the expectations of women at the time, choosing faith over family, defying male authority. It's quite powerful.
Right, challenging the norms.
But then you contrast that with, say, the often hyper-masculine, warrior-like imagery you see in a lot of modern militant propaganda. The way gender is portrayed nearly always serves a specific purpose, mobilizing certain people, reinforcing certain values within that community.
It's rarely accidental, the way these stories are told.
Almost never.
Okay, this is such a powerful way to look at these events. If we had to boil it down, what are maybe the three biggest themes or messages we should take away from Mitchell's work?
I think the absolute number one takeaway is martyrdom as constructed communication. Just keep reminding yourself, the meaning isn't in the death itself. It's layered on afterwards through stories, framing, rhetoric.
Right. The same event could be called martyrdom or suicide or murder or an accident.
Mm.
It all depends on who's telling the story and why.
Exactly. Which leads to the second key theme, power and manipulation. These narratives are tools, potent tools, used by governments, used by rebel groups, used by activists, always to advance some kind of agenda.
So the critical question becomes, who benefits? Who gains from telling this particular story of sacrifice in this particular way?
Mm-hmm. Always ask qui bono. And the third theme is about memory and identity. Martyrdom stories aren't just about the past. They're foundational myths for the present and future. They tell a group who they are, what they stand for, often by defining who they are against.
Creating boundaries, setting moral hierarchies.
Yes, which can be positive, building community solidarity, but also incredibly dangerous, fueling exclusion and conflict.
Mitchell uses some really memorable phrases to nail these ideas down. Are there a couple of core concepts or quotes that really stand out?
Oh, definitely. For me, the most fundamental one is, martyrdom is not discovered but constructed. That just cuts right through any sceptical aura.
Yeah.
It grounds it firmly in human action, in politics, in storytelling.
Yeah, that's stark and kind of related, isn't it? It's the idea that every martyrdom narrative is simultaneously a story about death and a strategy for life.
Exactly. They're not just looking backward at the person who died. They are absolutely aimed at the living audience. They're designed to get people to do something, join up, fight, donate, believe harder.
They're practical communications.
Very practical. And then linking back to media. The media do not simply report martyrdom. They participate in creating it. That puts some responsibility back on us, doesn't it? How we consume and share these stories matters. We're part of the process.
We are. And maybe the most crucial warning he gives, the most dangerous martyrdom narratives are those that claim to be beyond criticism.
Mm-hmm. When a story is presented as absolute divine truth, justifying any action, demanding unquestioning belief, that's when critical analysis becomes not just useful, but vital. That's Mitchell's call to all of us, really. Question those claims.
If we really take this framework on board, the real-life applications seem pretty immediate.
Yeah, they really are.
I mean, first off, just critical media literacy. When you're reading the news this week, especially about conflicts, pause. Look at the labels being used. Is it murder, freedom fighter, terrorist? Ask yourself who chose that word and what's their agenda.
It instantly makes you a more active, critical consumer of information rather than just passively accepting the framing.
And it helps in understanding global conflicts too, surely, moving beyond simplistic ideas like they just hate each other.
Absolutely. It gives you a lens to see the deeper cultural logic, the powerful historical narratives, the rhetorical strategies that actually motivate people and mobilize movements, even towards extreme sacrifice. It adds much needed nuance.
And finally, maybe closer to home, recognizing political rhetoric. When leaders start talking about sacrifice for the nation, demanding loyalty, justifying tough policies with appeals to collective suffering.
You can see it for what it often is, a deliberate attempt to construct a narrative, to harness that powerful martyrdom template for political ends.
It's about identifying the storytelling strategy.
Yeah. For me, the biggest lasting insight is just how loaded that word martyrdom is. It's both a sacred banner and a dangerous weapon. And all the power lies in who gets to define it, who controls the interpretation. We need to stay alert to that.
We really do. And Mitchell's point is that being alert, being critical, isn't just an academic exercise. He argues it's actually kind of moral responsibility, especially today.
Mm.
So maybe the final thought for you, the listener, is this. We live in a world absolutely saturated with these incredibly powerful stories of sacrifice, heroism, and death. If you accept that responsibility, Mitchell talks about the responsibility to critically analyze these narratives, how might that change the way you engage with the news or respond to calls for loyalty, maybe even just this week?
It's a profound question. Hopefully, Mitchell's insights equip you with better tools for thinking through it and a deeper respect for the sheer power of how we tell stories.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.